AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
You can tell when a haunting has been going on too long by the way the storyteller stops trying to convince you. There's no sales pitch in her voice, just a kind of exhausted certainty, like someone describing a leaky roof after years of putting out buckets. Her story starts 8.5 years ago in a house that was supposed to be the family's fresh chapter. She remembers the first few weeks as ordinary enough. Unpacked boxes stacked by the walls, the smell of new paint still clinging to the hallway, her two young daughters racing from room to room as if they'd found treasure in every closet. Then her four-year-old began talking to someone no one else could see. His name, she said, was Sean. Sean became a fixture almost immediately. He appeared to the child every night, sometimes at the foot of the bed, sometimes beside her toys, always close enough to speak to. At first, the mother tried to write it off as an imaginary friend, but there were nights when the child's quiet bedroom filled with the sounds of drawers slamming, toys shifting across the floor, footsteps running where there should have been silence. The tension grew until the mother finally stood in the hallway one evening and out loud asked Sean to leave. She doesn't remember her exact words, only the sharpness in her tone. The way her own voice seemed to echo too long in the house. For a little while, the activity eased, as though Sean had obeyed, but the quiet didn't last. She says the incidents changed shape rather than disappeared. Friends who'd visited once or twice stopped coming altogether. Even skeptical relatives refused invitations for dinner. The stories they carried home from her living room were enough to keep them away. A stuffed animal, one that wasn't battery-powered, sliding across a bedroom floor by itself, a glimpse of the same dark figure she herself had seen more than once at the end of the upstairs hall. One of the more unnerving confirmations came from her eldest child, who described seeing the exact same figure, down to the height and the way it lingered near the den doorway. By then, the family had grown used to oddities, lights flickering, doors that wouldn't stay shut. But when the stuffed animal moved, the mother realized they'd crossed into territory no one could dismiss as plumbing or faulty wiring. A local ghost hunting team was invited in. They arrived with video cameras, digital recorders, and the calm curiosity of people who believed they'd seen it all. They stayed a single night, recorded hours of footage, and promised to return. They never did. She says she got the impression they'd been disturbed more than they were willing to admit. The one piece of evidence they shared with her was a still image from the basement, a perfect circular orb of pale light clinging to the ceiling. Nothing in the room that could have caused the reflection. Another photo, one she considered her strongest proof, was lost to a computer failure. It had shown in broad daylight a gray-toned, child-sized figure standing just behind her young daughter on the patio during a birthday party. The picture had unsettled even the skeptical relatives. Now it exists only in their memory. The team's EVP equipment behaved strangely, too. In the bedrooms where it should have shut off after periods of silence, it stayed on, sometimes for hours. In other rooms, it clicked off only to start again a moment later, as if something unseen were pacing from one end of the house to the other. One of the sensitives on the team claimed to see clusters of small red millipedes in a particular corner of the basement. Later, she looked it up and discovered old folklore that links red millipedes to paranormal disturbances. She laughs at the idea, but says that part of the basement has always felt heavy, charged, an unspoken border. None of them cross alone. The electronic disturbances didn't end when the team packed up. Battery-operated toys in the playroom would suddenly burst into sound without being touched. The television in the den turned itself off only to snap back on a few seconds later. At night, the low hum of appliances often dropped out as if the house were holding its breath. What unsettled her most was that the disturbances weren't always menacing. Some felt almost purposeful, as though the presences, if that's what they were trying to get their attention rather than frighten them. A gifted friend told her the house contained 5 entities, all male, ranging in age from about 9 or 10 to full grown. They were, the friend said, seeking help. That idea that the spirits were drawn to her family not to harm them, but because they sensed something receptive in them, was both comforting and unnerving. Clairvoyance, she explains, runs in her family. Her youngest, just 2 years old at the time, had begun speaking from room to room to someone unseen, greeting invisible guests with a cheerful, "Hello!" Some mornings, the toddler carried on full conversations with the empty hallway, waving and nodding as if to people only she could see. There was also the strange timing, a pattern of activity spiking around 3 a.m., a time the mother and her eldest often woke without reason, sometimes to the sound of soft footsteps or the creak of a door shifting on its hinges. They searched the property's history, expecting to find a tragedy that might explain the unrest, an old death in the house, perhaps a violent incident, but found nothing except a curious fact. Decades earlier, a boy named Sean had indeed lived there. The son of a minister. He matched the description her 4-year-old had given when she first started speaking of her nighttime visitor. The mother, a Christian who prays over her children each night, believes there are things in the world science can't yet account for. She's blessed the home many times herself, brought in clergy for prayers, and still the disturbances ebb and flow like a tide that won't quite leave the shore. She admits to an instinct, almost a sixth sense, for knowing who in her church she can confide in, who might quietly understand. One such confidant, a man not known publicly for spiritual work, agreed to help cleanse the home. When they have asked a particular spirit to leave, she says they often succeed, but soon enough, a new presence will rise to fill the space, convincing her there may be a portal in the house itself. For years, the heightened activity clustered between September and January, but recently that seasonal rhythm dissolved. The disturbances have become year-round, the air charged no matter the month. The most recent incident still haunts her eldest, waking at exactly 3 a.m. to find the dark outline of an adult-sized figure standing over her bed. She watched it lower itself to one knee beside her, as though settling in for a long vigil. The girl squeezed her eyes shut and began to pray. She says she didn't feel terror, only an intense annoyance, the way you'd feel about a sibling shaking you awake at an ungodly hour. Another figure appeared about a year ago, a woman seen standing near the laptop in the daughter's room, watching it with an almost curious tilt to her head. That figure never came back. A later psychic reading suggested the woman had been seeking the daughter's help for something unresolved and, having found what she needed, had moved on. The more she spoke, the more I understood that the haunting was as much about endurance as it was about fear. Fear spikes and fades. Endurance lingers. You can live with almost anything if it comes and goes in waves, except the quiet knowledge that it might never really leave. She told me that even now, after nearly a decade in the house, the family still startles at ordinary noises. Every thump on the stairs makes them pause mid-sentence. A toy's sudden chime from the playroom can still pull them out of sleep like a scream. Most of the time, it's nothing, but most of the time isn't the same as always. She described the house at night in a way that stayed with me, the air turning viscous, the walls seeming to lean inward as if to listen. She said it wasn't always hostile, just attentive, as though the building itself were curious about the people living inside it. When I asked about the children, her expression softened. Her youngest, now older than the bright-eyed two-year-old who used to greet invisible friends in the hallway, still sometimes stops mid-play to wave at corners of the room. Her eldest has grown accustomed to the presence that kneels by her bed. Annoyance has replaced fear, though the memory of that first night still makes her grip the covers a little tighter before she falls asleep. She confessed that what troubles her most isn't the apparitions, but the persistence. Each time they ask one spirit to leave, another seems to take its place, as though the house is a revolving door for the unsettled. It's why she believes now that what they're living with isn't just a collection of wandering souls, but something more structural, an opening, a passage that invites new guests whenever an old one departs. The electronic disturbances continue as if to punctuate the point. The television in the den has learned to flick itself back on minutes after being shut off. Battery-powered toys, ones that require physical buttons to activate, sometimes sing on their own in the dark. Even the EVP devices used by the ghost hunting team behaved like they were caught in a loop, in some rooms never shutting down, in others stopping only to spark alive again seconds later. I asked her if she regretted inviting the investigators at all. She hesitated, then admitted she sometimes wonders if the attention only deepened the activity, as if the house enjoyed the recognition. She has tried everything she knows to keep her children safe, prayers spoken aloud over their rooms each night, home blessings performed by pastors, candles burned with scripture read in whispers. The rituals bring peace for a while, but it's the kind of peace that feels rented rather than earned. She told me about a night not long ago when her oldest came to her room around 3 a.m, eyes bleary but calm, saying she'd heard footsteps outside her door and then the sound of someone kneeling down again. The girl wasn't crying, she wasn't even shaken, and she was just tired. Tired of sharing her nights with things she couldn't see. That detail lodged itself in my mind. The child's reaction was not terror, but fatigue. That's what a long haunting does. It turns the extraordinary into routine, until even a shadow kneeling at your bedside is only an inconvenience, interrupting your sleep. I asked the mother what she hopes for now. She said she's stopped wishing for a perfectly normal house. She's accepted that something about her family draws attention from the other side. What she wants is a way to manage it, a set of rules that will keep the intrusions in check, a way to protect her children without denying the possibility that some of the presences may actually want help. She has begun to believe that her family's sensitivity isn't a curse, but a kind of responsibility. An unwanted duty to witness the unseen. Still, she admitted that some nights she would give anything just to be a regular family again, to wake up and worry only about homework and grocery lists and the mortgage. The house itself seems to know when it's being discussed. During one of our later conversations, she said that as she was recounting the events to me, the hallway light flickered, not in the way of a loose bulb, but in a single, deliberate blink. Like the room had winked. I think about that image often, a house that winks, not malicious, not friendly, just aware. She told me one last story before we ended. It was about her eldest woken again at 3 a.m., this time by a soft rattling at the foot of the bed. When she sat up, there was nothing there, just the silhouette of the dresser against the hallway light. But she could hear the sound of something small scuttling, like fingernails across the wood floor. She lay back down, pulled the blanket up, and began to pray. Not in panic, but as if reciting a familiar bedtime ritual. When she opened her eyes again, the room was still. The next morning, the toy keyboard in the playroom greeted them with a cheerful tune, though no one had gone near it. That's how most nights end in their house, with a return to an uneasy normal, as if the place itself needs rest after the commotion. If you're listening to this at home in a darkened bedroom or in a living room you trust, you might find yourself glancing toward the hallway or the corner of the ceiling. That's the power of a story like this. How it nudges you to notice the ordinary spaces around you as if they might be listening too. She told me she's made peace with some of it. She still prays nightly, still keeps an eye on the spots that feel heaviest, still believes the presences aren't all malicious, just trapped or curious. But she also believes something else, that the house itself or whatever lies beneath it will never be empty. Her final words to me were steady, not frightened. We've learned how to ask them to leave. We've learned how to pray. I just wish the door would stay shut after they go. I don't think it ever will. That's where I'll leave her tonight. A mother standing guard in a house that sometimes feels more like a waiting room for lost souls. Her children asleep upstairs, the walls breathing in their quiet, the electronics holding their breath until the next hour strikes. And somewhere, in the stillest part of that house, perhaps in the basement corner where the red millipedes once crawled, the dark waits patiently, curious as ever, about who might cross the threshold next.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.